Welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name's Matthew, and on this week's show, I'm having a chat with Zoe and Leon of Wordplay. Now, Wordplay, if you're not familiar with them already, are based down in England, and they deliver workshops and host parties around the UK, inviting people to script and record their own radio plays. At the moment, they seem to be doing a lot of work in schools with kids too, so they're actually training the people who are going to knock your show out in New and Noteworthy in 10 years' time. So what does the future of audio drama sound like? Well, here's a play from a recent workshop in London where participants were given a list of things that they had to write into the script. On that list was a red glove, a photograph of a cat, and a 55-year-old Miley Cyrus.
Location, Top Shop, Brighton, 16:52 p.m. Detective Alibi is working on a rather strange case when she is distracted.
OMG, look at that amazing jacket! Must have! And it's only $159.99! Half price! Hashtag crazy!
Meanwhile, on aisle 22.
Meow. Dolls, do you think this suits me? Lucid green goes well with magenta pink.
Suddenly, Miley Cyrus, hidden by a red glove, grabs the cat and stuffs it in a bag.
I came in like a wrecking ball. Wah-ha-ha!
At the seaside, the cats are in a bag, discussing Miley Cyrus's singing skills.
Oh, will she shut up?
That song isn't even good anyway. It shouldn't be on Spotify.
I much prefer Beethoven.
Miley Cyrus is drowning the cats. When Detective Alibi finally spends all her money.
Hiya! Do you like these new pantaloons? Oh! You murdered Fluffy Kim!
Caught in the act. Oh, no!
Detective Alibi was played by Fleur.
Cat and owner by Leon.
Narrator by Sophia.
And Miley Cyrus by Genie.
Miley Cyrus is drowning the cats. That's a phrase I never thought I'd hear on the Audio Drama Production Podcast. So if that hasn't whetted your appetite to hear from Zoe and Leon, I don't know what will. Be sure to stick around after our chat too. There's a few wee things I've got to mention. The first is that I've made a video course that teaches you how to master Audacity in just a couple of hours. Also, I want to let you know about the Audio Drama Network and how you can get involved. And I'll tell you which friends of the show have joined a big old fancy podcast network. You might already know that one, but still. Okay, let's have some wordplay then, shall we?
Okay, so my name's Leon.
And I'm Zoe.
And together we run something called Wordplay, which we've been working on for about 6 months now. And it started off as a project to do with radio drama and children, but now it's kind of grown into something else, which is more to do with audio and radio art, but still with the drama being a big part of it. But we're now dabbling in podcasts and things that aren't necessarily to do with storytelling. But yeah, our main kind of project is the radio drama, the live radio drama challenge.
Yes.
There's obviously two of us. We both run it. Zoe, you should introduce the challenge.
Well, yeah, you've introduced it. But yeah, we basically get, mainly we work with children, and we basically get the children to write a very short radio play, and we give them challenge objects that they have to include in their drama. So that could be a photograph or, I don't know, a song lyric, anything like that, you know, a picture of a cat, things like that, that they have to include in their play. And then we have a pop-up radio studio, and they write their script, and then they perform it live, and we broadcast it to all their friends and family. That's basically the radio drama challenge.
I wish you turned up at my school when I was young. That would have been really good. So where did the idea for all this come from then? What got you started?
Well, it's kind of a joint thing, wasn't it? So I've been working in education for quite a while, and I worked for a charity called Listening Books, and we sent out audiobooks to kids and adults who couldn't read, and that kind of got me interested in the audio side of things. And I've worked with kids sort of before, and Leon's obsessed with radio, so I'll let you.
I was kind of for a number of years been doing things with community radio and hospital radio stations, which. Yeah, I really love doing and podcasts as well, which sometimes get played on kind of art stations, but quite often are just made for the sake of making them, I guess, and dabbling and doing a little bit of audio work for some radio stations. But we thought, like, I don't know, it seemed like a great collaboration of both the things we're interested in. And I think through both my experience in radio, unless you were working for a big company, which I never have, like lots of the more elaborate projects you kick off doing and then you realize you're just one person and you can't really unless you have all the time in the world, you can't see them through. So we were both at a similar stage where we thought, oh, we want to work on something that's a little bit more elaborate and a bit of the unknown. Neither of us had really, I'd say the drama bit is the one bit that neither of us had experienced.
Yeah, it's a bit strange we chose that. But yeah, it's really good. And because we work with the kids, they obviously have a lot better, better ideas than we do. So we thought, great, give them. And the challenge side of it kind of gets them thinking. It's a bit more creative than, you know, just, I guess they have so many ideas, it's quite hard for them to kind of narrow them down. So that's why we give them sort of objects and sound effects. They do their own sound effects as well. We forgot to mention that. So we give them, like, you know, some rice and buckets and bells and very odd, and some celery for breaking bones, things like that. So, yeah, it's cool.
So before we want, because I want to ask you a bit about the kids and the reception that you get from them. But before we get to that, what's the process between... you know, if we go right back to the stage where you want to do a workshop for somebody or they want you to do a workshop, right through to actually turning up on the day and running through it all. And then, you know, is there a sort of follow-up after that as well? Do you send them a recording of the play that they've produced?
Yeah, so we do them in lots of different locations. So the most recent one we've done is in a bookshop, a local one to us. And so basically they're in charge of ticket sales and the kids get really excited. So they come along to the workshop. It's usually in a location like a bookshop or, you know, trying to get into schools, and we do festivals and things like that. So then they do the live performance. But yeah, we also record all the plays and they get put on our website afterwards. Or if parents ask for it, we send them a link to their play. But a lot of the time they like to go onto the website because they can hear each other's plays, which I think they quite like, don't they?
Yeah, we got a listen again page so they can all go through, and it's we just upload everything to Mixcloud so it can be kind of shared on social media and stuff like that, because we have dabbled with doing a few for adults, which we're still kind of experimenting with how that's going, because even though that these challenge items, which are really important, seem to work completely differently. With the kids, it seems to be almost a restraint to keep them working in the same direction with the adults. It's quite good in the fact that we did one in a bar and a few of the people who turned up were friends of ours. A few of them were really into radio and writing, and a few of them were just kind of bemused people who just accidentally showed up. And when we told them, oh, you've got to... write a radio script, which lots of them had never done, and it's against the clock, and then you've got to perform it, they were a bit intimidated. But once there's these items, they kind of all, I don't know, kind of, it's interesting to see the different, like the people who kind of admit that they're least likely to be wanting to be in this situation are the ones that kind of take the helm, I guess, and say, oh, we've got to get the fire truck in there, otherwise our play will be...
Yeah, and they really go for it. They're like the kind of shy, even with the kids, the shy, sort of timid ones. I'm like, no, I can't perform. As soon as they put the headphones on, get to the microphones, they're like, yes, I'm doing this. And they take it really seriously. So it's quite fun for us to see the whole process. Because for us, it's not, their play could be terrible, which usually they're not. We can send you some links afterwards for them. They, you know, sometimes, yeah, it's more about how they approach the challenge rather than their final product. But obviously for the kids... They want to hear their own play, so that's great as well.
So how do you sort of, do people generally approach you and book yourselves, or do you approach a lot of people and get bookings that way? How do you sort of market it, like the benefits that you're kind of offering to people?
It's a bit of both, really. So yeah, we do parties. We've got some private parties booked up just in people's homes. So they've obviously found us either through the internet or from workshops they've previously done, and they want to book us. Or we approach sort of, we're doing one in a gallery where it's linked to South London Gallery in Peckham, and they approached us because they want to tie it in with Southwark Poetry Festival. So we're doing a sort of poetic, not so much a radio drama, but yeah, anything that the kids find poetic in their everyday lives, we'll kind of put on a kind of live broadcast of that as well. So yeah, it's a bit of both, isn't
but,
it?
But we have found it, and that was something which we're still trying to work out, is how to, it's very hard to describe, especially on a poster, what exactly these events are, and or in a very fast phrase. So it is a real tricky one. Like, how do you, well, we've been speaking to school teachers about the best ways to get into schools, and they've been helping us a lot, but like about phrasing and things like that. But even the ones we've done in bookshops, once we're in front of people and describe what it is, that lots of people are really like want to do it. But when you kind of write down live radio drama challenge, it doesn't really, even with our little blurb, you still can't really get an awful lot from it. So it's definitely hard. In a learning experience part of that.
Yeah, you should start a podcast about it.
We have.
Yeah, we've started one. Yeah, we started one in April.
If I'd done my research, I would have
known
that.
It's very recent.
Yeah, just one episode in. But we're looking for guest hosts as well. If perhaps you're interested to anybody listening, because we're doing we do different amounts of the workshop every month. Mm. But we're going to have it as a kind of, the first episode was hosted by both me and Zoe, but we want somebody to come in and do a kind of pick of the plays, their favourite bits from the plays. So we give them everything that got recorded in the workshops, and they say, oh, this bit was really funny or whatever, and along with kind of interviews with people who were there on the day. So yeah, we're on the podcast for sure.
Well, we'll get a link for that and contact details at the end, because I'm sure some people will be very interested in that. What about your equipment that you take around? Have you got quite a lot of stuff, or do you try and keep it really simple?
it's quite a lot of stuff, but actually we have a pop-up studio that we take everywhere, and it fits in my Ford KA, so it's quite a small car, but it does all fit in. But to be honest, most of the stuff is actually for the sound effects. So we sort of tend to bring our own furniture, and we've got a little door that we've made. You know, obviously you need a door in a radio play, a squeaky gate and things like that. So yeah, most of it is just objects in our car. But in terms of audio equipment.
Yeah, we build this pop-up studio everywhere, and it is, we as soon as we get there, we stick it together, because especially with the younger children, lots of them start writing the plays, but aren't 100% what a radio play would sound like, and we try and get them behind the microphones with the headphones on as soon as possible, and then it kind of makes the writing process a lot more kind of make sense. And we bring along three like vocal condenser mics. We have up to five like participants in a group, so we have those which we mount to a table which we usually borrow from the place, but that's sometimes tricky.
Or we bring our own.
Yeah, and then we cover that with all our sound effects stuff, which, as Zoe was saying, lots of it is kind of from
vegetables,
boot fairs and fruit and veg stores and stuff like that. And then we have a shotgun condenser mic down on the table to pick up all the all those kind of Foley noises, and we put those all into a four channel Tascam, and record them all as kind of independent tracks, but then have a feed out of that going into the live streaming for the live stream for parents to listen at home, or sometimes we're doing one in an art gallery and it's been streamed to different parts of the building. And then after, when we get home, we don't edit the plays at all, but we just go through and sometimes we have, like when you're getting really excited with the rain stick, sometimes you end up bashing all the other mics, so we just mute those out in the edit. at the end of the day, and then pop, like we said before, pop the whole lot up on Mixcloud, hopefully for the next day. Sometimes we're working into the night to
get
that there.
It's quite a long process, and parents always email us and call us and like, when's it going to go up on the website? And we're like, oh, we're doing it, we're trying. But yeah, they get quite keen, which is good, really good. But yeah, it's quite a lot of work. It's not a two-hour workshop. It's obviously... For us, it's like a whole day from, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning till probably midnight for the whole thing. So but it's definitely worth it. It's good. I like it.
Working with kids, I mean, you're always going to get one or two that are a bit overly hyper, I suppose. I've just got visions of you sort of guarding a microphone amongst all these kids running around it. But is it always quite, have you never had any bad experiences like that?
They're quite lively, the groups. So we have, the bike horns. That's quite a popular sound effect, the one. And the kids tend to get a bit crazy as soon as they see that. And they are I can't think of the right word. But
we don't promote craziness, but it does get a little bit crazy in the writing bit, which you wouldn't necessarily have thought it would, because they've got so many ideas and they're kind of usually in some of these spaces right next to the studio. So there might be one group trying out all their cool sounds whilst everyone else is writing. But for the actual broadcast, it's fairly calm because the kind of
nervous.
The real, well, actually, when it gets to, so we're all working in a room together, and when it gets to the time, the last half an hour of the workshop and the broadcast is coming up, we have the radio set up somewhere else in the building, or the last one we did, it was actually out on the streets so passers-by could listen. And every other group went down and stood around the radio whilst the first group takes their turn in the studio, and then we all kind of swap round like that. And once the groups are in the studio on their own and they've been doing the writing and they know that they're about to go live, it
suddenly changes. The atmosphere kind of calms down. But I tend to look after the rowdy kids outside while Leon focuses on the audio side of things. That seems to work, doesn't it?
I think that's definitely the easiest job as well.
Yeah, Leon's behaviour management skills aren't quite up there yet. But I'm teaching him, it's okay.
You talk about, I mean, the way you're talking about going live, and I was going to ask you this, do you think that's an important part of it? Just, you know, people record podcasts for years and years, but still when you go live, sometimes there's that little thrill, that little bit of nerves. And do you think that's quite a key part of the lesson for what you're trying to maybe teach them a wee bit, and just giving them that bit of focus, knowing that you can't just stop it and start it again, you've got to keep going?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think it helps. Well, it helps. It definitely makes them, I think maybe that's why they get so nervous, because they, when in their rehearsals, you know, they giggle and they kind of, you know, make fun of each other and things. But as soon as we say, right, we're going live, I mean, they get that. They're not, you know, they understand what that means. So they do tend to kind of take that on board. And most, I think every single play we've done, all the kids have just, if they've made a mistake, they've just carried on, which is really good. I mean, we did a practice one, didn't we, when we first set up, sort of back in November last year. And it was really, I found it really nerve-wracking because it's something I've never done before. And probably 90% of the kids have never performed or, you know, spoken to a microphone or anything. So for them, it's exciting, but it's also quite a bit of a challenge. But it's definitely the most fun part of doing it, isn't it, doing it live?
Yeah, the idea of the live nature of it, and how podcasts especially, like, there's a whole world of making an audio drama. It's a whole other world, the editing side. But not necessarily just for practical reasons, because we've only got a couple of hours. But the live bit is really important. And I think it's, like Zoe was saying, it kind of drums up the... When we have a handheld kind of little recorder there, and we occasionally do little interviews with children who are like a quiet point during the day when they're not in the studio. And, yeah, the importance... it's just not there as much. However, there is something that differently comes from that, where I don't know whether it is because it's a live performance. When it's happened and then afterwards we say, oh, we could actually listen back to the plays now, or you can listen to them tomorrow on the internet, the majority of the children couldn't care less. They've just done it. They don't want to listen to their plays again. Why would they?
Yeah, the parents want to listen to it again. But yeah, the kids, for them, it is about the performing. And when we interview them with our, you know, our handheld sort of microphone, they 99% of them saying, what's your favourite part? It's definitely the performance. and obviously doing the sound effects with that. I guess that's part of it. So all the sound effects are live as well. We don't add anything, also because we can't be bothered, but we'd never add anything extra sort of on top. So they have to use what's there on the table, which is also another challenge, because, you know, we have things like cellophane. They're like, how can we get this in the play? So, yeah, it's I think it's good doing it live.
And what's your long-term ambitions for the project? Like, how far do you want to take it?
So I think, as good as the radio drama challenge is, that's still going to remain something that we're both love, but we're just starting in the last month to do some kind of offshoot projects, which sometimes some of them are a move away from drama, and I guess they are definitely going to be ones in the future that are connected. And it's more getting children behind microphones that I think is we've discovered is our passion in this, rather than the radio drama challenge itself. So at the moment we're organizing a podcast for a Foyles the bookshop are doing a children's reading festival and writing festival, and we said to them, we think you should have a podcast, but the podcast should be produced and hosted all by children, because the festival is for children. And it's that kind of, I think right at the beginning when we were talking about it, I was talking to Zoe about community radio and the different types of community radio stations, and how brilliant it would be if there was a community radio station that set up maybe just for a week, but it was all run by children. And I think projects like that are things that we are excited about doing in the future, as long as but still doing the radio drama as well.
Yeah, and we've spoken to a few teachers as well, and they're this might be a bit biased because one of them was an IT teacher and math teacher, but he got really excited when we said that we want to start doing podcast clubs, you know, in schools and sort of out in the community. So that's another side of it. So we want the kids to host and, you know, present their own shows, but also learn sort of behind the scenes sort of things, so editing, you know, doing interviews and things like that. And I think a lot of schools are, you know, they have to learn coding and stuff. You know, anything sort of IT related, they're like, yes, because teachers, you know, they're not sure, you know, they don't know everything. I guess they're all kind of jack of all trades. So I think we want to do that in schools as well as the drama challenge. So it's kind of good to offer them either or both. So it gives us more work.
I'm just curious, like, how much explanation do you usually have to give to kids and parents, I suppose, about, like, what is a radio drama, what's an audio drama, what's a podcast? Do you find sometimes the kids know more than the adults, or is it just a mix?
Yeah, I think in terms of the podcast, I think kids definitely know more than their parents, and my mum doesn't know. I'm like, oh, mum, we listen to our podcast, and she doesn't know what a podcast is. So, but I think, yeah, it's definitely a generational thing. But with the radio drama, I guess, I don't know, the kids don't really ask questions. I guess we show them, we play some examples at the beginning of our radio drama workshops. And the kids kind of, I guess they kind of just get it. But obviously, I guess the main focus for us isn't, like I said before, the quality of their produced, you know, their final product. It's kind of them working together and getting things down to paper, getting things on paper quite quickly. So it's, yeah, I don't know really.
But with the children and the radio drama, whilst, yeah, they all get podcasting straight away, we do have, there's always a couple of children who say, oh yeah, in our film we're going to have this, and we have to say, well, yeah, but you're not making a film. And then the word film comes up quite a bit.
Yeah, we have to try and encourage them to kind of think, great, so you've got this idea, how do you get that across in audio? Remember, your audience can't see you. So we do give them sort of, I think it depends on the group. So we work with some homeschool children, and I don't know, it's just they seem quite different to kids who just, you know, that we've worked a bit with before. And, you know, they're like, oh, I listen to Women's Hour, I, you know, I do all this stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, great. They just know quite a lot, probably more than me, about radio and more shows and things. So I guess it depends on the groups that we're working with. So like that, remember that boy Caius, and he was just obsessed. He's like, yes, my film is going to be so good, you know, people are going to see, thank you know, even at the end it's like, thank you for watching, no, thank you for listening, you know, that kind of, he gets kind of a bit confused. And there's another girl who was like, right, I want a pink helicopter and it's going to fly in. I was like, great, how are you going to explain that to your audience? Are you gonna, you know, they don't think about a narrator, or they don't think how the characters sort of you know, how they talk to each other. So it's really good to kind of get them thinking in a different way.
Yeah, because, I mean, very few of them, aside for, you know, you mentioned one that listens to the Women's Hour, they're going to be coming at this. It's like a blank slate, isn't it? They're not influenced by anything, aside from maybe, well, TV shows, obviously, which they...
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's quite nice that they're not, you know, some kids, they kind of, you can tell the kind of kids that think they know everything and they're like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. But as soon as they start doing it, they're actually like, oh, actually, I don't know what I'm doing. And then they kind of absorb it more if they're not sure what they're doing at all. Whereas the kids are kind of, the more reserved kids are the ones that think they know everything. So it's quite nice getting them to actually think, oh, this is something new for me and I'm learning and I actually quite enjoy this. So yeah, it's quite a learning experience for everyone, for us as well as the kids, and possibly the parents as well. The parents are always quite, not shocked, it's kind of the wrong word, but they're quite surprised with the work that the children have produced. And we kind of emphasise that we don't help them at all, really, unless they're like, how do you spell chocolate? You know, we don't really help them with their actual writing, unless they ask us to. But we find that a lot of kids, and adults especially, they don't want us to actually get involved with their writing, do they?
Yeah, it's quite private in the groups, and really, like, all they want is us to give them more time to work on their scripts or to have another rehearsal.
Well, Zoe and Leon, it's been absolutely great to chat. I'm really impressed with what you're doing, and you know, we've been trying to get you on for some time. We've just not been able to get the same day, have we? But where can the listener find you online? How could they get in touch with you about bookings or your podcast or just anything else?
Yeah, so if you go online, we've got a website which has all that information, which is www.wordplayeducation.co.uk. And we're also on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, we're Wordplay Audio. And I think, well, and the podcast, I should say, is called Wordplay. What's the exact phrase? Wordplay, the Wordplay podcast. But we've only one episode.
We've only got one episode, and it's on iTunes. So yeah, try and find us on iTunes and give us some reviews.
Lovely stuff. Huge thanks to Leon and Zoe for the chat. I really like what they're doing for the medium and wish them all the very best. If you're having a party, hire them. Imagine some of the scripts you could write after 12 or 13 pints. Imagine the acting. Anyway, on to some other business before we get wrapped up. There's been some big audio drama podcast network news this week. Here's an email. I'll read it to you. Wondery are a brand new podcast network launched by former Fox execs Hernan Lopez, the former CEO and president of Fox International, and Jeffrey Glazer, the former president of Current Programming. They've added three new audio series to the podcast network's lineup, from Tom Lopez's ZBS and Fred Greenhalgh's Final Rune Productions. This lineup includes Radio Drama Revival, The Cleansed, and Ruby, Adventures of a Galactic Gumshoe. And it says this is just the tip of the iceberg for a wealth of crafted content to be launched by Wondery this season. So that's brilliant news for our pals Fred, David, and the team over at Radio Drama Revival. Thoroughly deserved for the work they've put in over the years, and it's great to see them continuing to go from strength to strength with these new opportunities. And of course, Tom Lopez, who's mentioned there too, he's a real legend in the world of radio drama. There was actually a great wee feature on him by NPR last week, so I'll stick a link to that in the show notes, along with everything else mentioned here today. Onwards to the next piece of business then, the Audio Drama Network is up and running. The Audio Drama Network, and this is taken from their executive summary, aims to create a national and international non-profit audio network that focuses on the collaborative development and promotion of the craft of audio storytelling. Members of the Audio Drama Network will have access to programmes, workshops and panels that will focus on creating professional quality audio shows. The Audio Drama Network will provide access to equipment and software discounts, grants, advertising incentives and an extensive database of audio creators, Productions and Talent. Additionally, members will share a vehicle for advertising and promotion through member shows and showcase productions like Radio Drama Revival, Soundstages Radio and the Audio Drama Production Podcast. Craft-oriented discussion via online panels and conferences, awards and contests, a shared audience and marketing assistance. The Audio Drama Network is a collaborative organisation that will integrate current efforts to support and disseminate audio productions worldwide. Our goal is to develop standardisation within audio drama to increase its relevance as a professional form of entertainment around the world. And I'm really proud to say that I've joined their team along with David Jarvis, Eli McElveen, Monique Boudreau, Sibby Wieland, Rich Wentworth and Matthew Boudreau. It's my job to find volunteers for the network, so that's where you come in. We're looking for a social media officer to run the Facebook and Twitter accounts, as well as a handful of people to help create audio drama programmes for education. We're also looking for street team members who want to share information about the Audio Drama Network and the medium itself within the broader world. If you think you might be interested in any of these roles, drop me a line at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com and I'll send you more details. This is a great opportunity to be part of something big, and if that alone isn't a reason to email me, don't make me go back empty-handed to my cool friends. They might get rid of me and bring in somebody more competent. Anyway, last but not least on this episode, are you someone who's trying to find their feet with mixing and audio editing? Maybe you've never recorded or edited audio before in your life, but you'd really like to start making some audio drama. Well, I've created a video course teaching you everything you need to know about the world's favourite free audio editing programme, Audacity. The course is aimed predominantly at podcasters, but it'll give you a great grounding in mixing audio and hopefully give you the push you need towards finally getting that story idea off your chest. It's available for $99 or £65 if you live on this side of the Atlantic, and I'll have a link to it in the episode show notes at audiodramaproduction.com. And with that, I'm going to say farewell to you for this episode. We'll be back in a fortnight with episode 90. Imagine that. Okay, thanks very much for listening. Thanks for listening right to the end too. Go and get yourself a cup of tea, open up your computer and send me an email. See you soon.